Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this. We have two dates here, June the 30th on the West Coast and July the 1st, 2011, on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome those listening in around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network. Glad you could be with us this evening. Well, with all the madness going on in the world, we couldn't have a better guest to walk us through some of the things that are going on. He hosts his own radio show every other Saturday on BBSRadio.com, Station 1. The show is called Zero Point. And he has a website also called zeropoint.ca where he posts his works, his literary works. He's a prolific writer and a student of metaphysics. You could say he is an expert in the mystical and spiritual sciences. And he's written about the works of others and sort of brought all their teachings together under one cover on more than one occasion, actually. And, of course, I'm speaking about the works of H.P. Blavatsky and G.I. Gurdjieff and some others. He joins us again tonight to continue a discussion that we've been having over the past month or so in regard to how we deal with the problems that the world has and the issue of man awakening, discovering the zero point place, which begins in the heart and really connects us with the rest of creation. I welcome back to Evident Footprints this evening my good friend Christopher Holmes, PhD. Christopher, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Well, thank you, Dan. That was very nice what you said, connecting to the zero point in the heart and how everything goes from there.
Yes.
Expressed.
I've been reading your work, believe it or not. In my spare moments, I pick up your books and
one just reads through. Like, they're books that need, you know, be studied over time, kind of like that. And, you know, as you reread parts of it, you know, it's easier. And, you know, it takes time. They're not easy reads. Yeah, they're kind of scholarly academic books and a lot of content to them. So it really takes time. And some of the concepts are quite, well, really very new to people, especially the concept of the zero point. Like, I don't know anyone else in psychology or science at the moment arguing that human beings have a zero point center, what I would call a zero point center. That just like how scientists think the universe emerged from a singularity point and kind of grew within without from a singularity point, I'm saying that human beings have a similar kind of first point. You could call it different things, like a jiva atma or a god spark or a spark of holiness, that human beings have such an element within themselves. And mm-hmm. This is connected to the higher dimensional physics of the heart. So the whole concept of my writings about the heart and about the origins of human consciousness are really very distinctive and different from other things I'm familiar with in the mainstream anyway.
Yes. You know, when I read your work, I read it with an open mind, but I find that the understanding that comes through, especially when you're analyzing what Gurdjieff wrote or Blavatsky, I think you know my thoughts on Blavatsky, that a lot of her work, I think, was hijacked and used for nefarious purposes. And I'm not totally convinced that she didn't play some part in that. But, you know, I'm not being judgmental. I'm being more objective, at least. And I'm keeping an open mind to find that zero point within myself where maybe I could change my views in that regard. So, you know, I don't look at someone that spent their whole life dealing with those issues as a bad person necessarily. You know, anyone could say that anyone else is a bad person for whatever reason, whether it's true or not. That seems to be the kind of spiritual one-upmanship that the planet undergoes on a regular basis. But what I find is, like you were just saying, these works are not meant to just be read through and disregarded and sort of whatever accidentally clings to you and becomes part of your consciousness is a crapshoot. I see the Zen in what each one is actually saying. Even Aleister Crowley, although I know that much of his work and much of his involvement with establishing the Illuminati and all of the rituals that go on behind the scenes, there's a purity to some of what he wrote. Yet it's how the application becomes tainted or distorted by taking those truths and using them as a dialectical reality. In other words, you present yourself as being peaceful, you present yourself as being honorable, you present yourself as being loving, but in reality, everything you're doing behind the scenes is the opposite. So I see Gurdjieff's work is sort of, there's a Zen in what he said and what he wrote. I was reading Slugs this evening.
Oh.
And reading about this whole concept of war and how those that create the wars can't seem to learn about their shortcomings. And you've actually posted something on your website that I read as well that expounds on that. And those were sort of the seven flaws, if you want to call them that.
Well, the seven being impulses of Hasnamasas, or what Gurdjieff calls Hasnamas individuals.
Yes.
Lack of divine conscience.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. Exactly.
Well, you mentioned that. Can I pick it up? And I'll go through a few of the things you've mentioned. And going back to Blavatsky, like, I don't really understand. Like, I'm not an autobiographer so much, but in a way, I take someone like Blavatsky, and I took volume one of The Secret Doctrine, okay, mm-hmm. which Manly Hall described as undoubtedly the magnus opus of the literature of the modern world, okay, but he was also a 33rd degree Mason, but obviously, The Secret Doctrine's a profound book, probably the classic of modern occultism. And Blavatsky was a remarkable woman who kind of traveled independently around the world, I think two or three times, and traveled across America in a covered wagon and lived among the Indians of Mexico and lived in the Tibetan Alps. And I mean, she was a remarkable woman and founded theosophy, the idea that there's Theo, meaning God, and Sophie, meaning knowledge. So she would claim their divine wisdom teachings. That she and she was an amazing scholar and individualist. And she was very against ritual and practical magic as what is the basis of the Illuminati and their black magic occultism. Blavatsky was totally against that aspect. And she was also revealing of the church and very critical of the Jesuits. And her work was condemned, and the Jesuits rallied against her. And there was an effort made, in my view, to discredit her over what's called the Coombs affair, and where she was supposedly shown as you know using trickery and fraud, which may or may not have been true, but in a way, I think she became, you know, she was ostracized in a way, and in a way, I think people misunderstand Blavatsky. Like, I know in an Alex Jones movie, it shows Blavatsky as one of these bad occultists, and I think that's really unfair. I think her mm-hmm. work was taken by the black occultists because they realized its significance. But I think Blavatsky herself, that's really inappropriate. I mean, she had this idea of the brotherhood of humanity, and she had, like, new compassion. She didn't want a group of mass murdering eugenicists taking over the world like a, you know, satanic Luciferian society. Like, that wasn't Blavatsky's ideals at all. But regardless, like, I just take the book, The Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, on cosmogenesis, meaning the creation of the universe. And I'm interested in modern physics and science, so I study modern physics of creation. And there's unbelievably remarkable parallels between what she said and the newest ideas in quantum physics. Her work anticipated vacuum genesis, creation from singularities, seven-dimensional hyperspace, expanding, contracting universes, and many, many other ideas which are, like, very profound. So in a way, I take her work even apart from whether she was this or that. Like, I just take it. It's a scholarly book. I try to understand what she was saying in it, and then to compare it with physics, irrespective. In a way, I don't care who wrote it. And then you mentioned next Crowley. And in a way, I have the same attitude with Crowley. Like, I know in my book, The Heart Doctrine, I think my book on Crowley, my chapter on him is called Hodit and Nui. And it's all about, like, Crowley uses, this is based on the Book of the Law, which is Crowley's most famous book. And it's all about the kind of mysteries of cosmic love. And Hodit is the individual star, and Nui represents space, or the Divine Mother. So you imagine a night sky with all different stars in it. And each of those stars is a Hodit, and that exists within the Nui, the Mother space. And Crowley says the first principle of magic is every man and woman is a star. So when I read Crowley, in a way, when I studied the Book of the Law, which was his revelations from a certain period when he was in Egypt early on in his life, so I study that as mystical revelation and what it reveals about the mysteries, irrespective of what Crowley then seemed to become in terms of becoming, seeming, I think, a homosexual pedophile and all kinds of kind of satanic things he got into, apparently. So, I mean, I wasn't aware of that when I studied his book of revelations just as a scientist and scholar. So I kind of take these esoteric books in a way apart from the individuals and just try to understand the significance of it. Because even someone like Crowley, people have these states and experiences, and they can become, well, Jung called it infatuated by an archetype. Infatuated by an archetype, or it can set off, like someone can turn to the dark side and use their occult powers and realizations in a dark way, and that definitely seems to have been the case with Crowley. But still, that doesn't mean that his writings in about Hodit and Nui aren't really quite beautiful. Beautiful writings about the cosmic significance of love and the nature of consciousness and such. So that's just a couple comments about my attitude, because people say, oh, you write about Crowley, you must be a bad guy and support kind of Satanism and such, you know?
Yeah, I reserve my, well, I don't even want to use the word judgment, but my, you know, coming to a final conclusion in that regard merely because I look at the work and it sounds true. I could say, you know, well, he says everyone is a star, but this reality is based on shooting stars. So where is the value in being a star if it's not available to everyone in that regard by the system? Now, the issues become how their works, and we're speaking about Blavatsky and Crowley, how their works were hijacked by secret societies, by these secret leagues, by these secret organizations, by the Illuminati. And their works are referred to not necessarily in a negative way, but if you study any of the Rosicrucian works and you look at the role that the Rosicrucians play in media, even today, or while they were building up the media to become what it is today, they often spoke about her works, but the application for exerting power over others, this insatiable, unquenchable thirst for power over others, and at any cost and regardless of the consequences, with, in other words, absent of any conscience whatsoever, has become the norm of this reality. So if we understand what they wrote, but it's used for the wrong purposes, then where is the value in what they wrote?
You know what I'm saying? It's a similar thing about science. I mean, science in itself, scientific discoveries aren't bad, but when they're used to make weapons of mass destruction, which seems the main objective of the power-possessing beings, is to devise new ways of mass murdering people. So you can do it from a table or with a joystick in Florida and mass murder someone over in Pakistan and terrorize people around the world. So, I mean, you know, like occult teachings can be used for positive or negative purposes. And I mean, that's definitely true. I mean, I believe there's black magic. I believe these Illuminati are into black magic and Satanism and blood sacrifice and trying to sustain their soul life off drinking blood. And, you know, these people, a good clinical term is whacked.
Yes, yes. Now there is a point, and I'm not to use a pun. There is a point in this discussion where I would like to contemplate the concept of the creation, starting from zero point in terms of the intention of the creation, because certainly the creator wasn't at zero point at that time. The creator was the all. And in the nutshell, my interpretation of the purpose behind the creation was for this supreme being that we call God, decided in his infinite wisdom and infinite omniscience and omnipotence that it would serve him well to experience his creation by giving others the same qualities, making them gods themselves, but just fractions, minuscule, imperceptible fractions of the whole, individuated for the purpose of creating, and then eventually reaching that same consciousness where they would once again move from being fractured, a fractured individuation of the whole, which never really was separated, just given the opportunity to become its own consciousness and gain that wisdom, only to become the whole. Now, it seems here on this planet, we do everything the opposite. Everything is destroyed. Everything is suppressed. Information, knowledge, wisdom, consciousness, health, everything, even life itself is suppressed. So if we look at the creation as the opportunity for all that which is created to again return to the wholeness of the creation, maybe maybe condensing back to that zero point, only to expand again outward with the same opportunities for other creations. Does that make sense?
Yeah, all many aspects. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I agree totally. We've been suppressed in every aspect of our life through the media and the educational system, the deliberate dumbing down, the promotion of the dogmas of Darwinianism and material science philosophy, the denial of soul. You don't get study. You can't go to universities in Canada and the States and study the secret doctrine or Gurdjieff or the things I write about. You can't get that in the universities for the most part. Occasionally you do. They've kept this kind of material out of the universities. That's why I was persecuted out of York University in Toronto, because my teaching was creating a phenomenon. It was so popular in the university. It was a huge threat to them. So they have suppressed every aspect of our life and try in every way to demean human beings. Like, I know in Henry Mackau's book, The Illuminati, he says the Illuminati most fear a revival of the belief in God, because in a way they've wanted to promote atheism and kind of existentialism and live life for yourself, and you know, you're just here for yourself. There's no higher purpose. There's nothing beyond life. So you just, you know, you let your greed and your perversions run wild and enjoy yourself. You know, this they've done that, and they've tried to undermine what Gurdjieff calls essence values in every aspect of our life. They poison the food, the water, the air, our minds. So that's one aspect. Going back, you're talking about creation science and like why God kind of created the universe, and I agree. So like my views are so similar to yourself in a way. Like I see it as a cosmic game of hide and seek. That God in a way kind of loses. You know, it's like a crystal that fractures, and it's all these individual little stars, and we have this higher nature. But then we're sewn into a body, and we're sewn into what Plato calls the instrument of time. And we lose ourselves, and so then we live in what Gurdjieff calls forgetfulness. We don't remember who we are. We don't connect anymore to that divine element in us. It's still there, but its level of vibratory existence is like so above our conditioned mundane consciousness, which is conditioned into our lower nature. And they wanted this. They want to take the mood, the souls. In a way, I believe they want to feed the lower worlds through stealing human souls. And I believe when souls pass, they can be taken to the moon and live in subterranean types of worlds that they feed off moons. They don't want people escaping into the higher levels.
Yes,
because I believe a person at death, you can pass into the sun or into spiritual levels, or you can be drawn into the underworld.
You mentioned science, and to me, science has been on this one-way street to discount the validity of a higher self or of a higher consciousness. Everything is based on technology, formulas that explain the technology. When the technology goes bad, they have to develop solutions to correct the problems. And you mentioned Newton's law. Well, we have Newton's law and Kepler's law and Darwinian concepts. And we have all these laws in the scientific community. And yet in education, they don't teach God's laws. You see, they don't teach the creation. They want us to disbelieve in it or come to the conclusion that the whole thing is a hoax. Yet the science itself can't provide the answers. They can give us a lot of mumbo jumbo and break things down into smaller and smaller particles. You know, you go from nanotechnology, you make this quantum leap to quantum physics, and still they still have the same problems. The basic getting it that it's wrong to kill people just for the sake of killing people, thinking that there are no consequences. There are no reciprocal penalties, if you want to use that word, for having done so. Because they're violating universal law. They're violating the Creator's laws constantly. Somewhere along the line, there is going to have to be a payback for that in some manner. Any comment on that?
Yeah, great. Well, firstly, like, I think people who kind of think much of what I hear called science, I would call quack science or pseudoscience. And in science, like, the hard material datum of science, like, that's scientific, but it's the interpretation of the facts of science which is pseudo-scientific, but it's presented as part of the data of science, whereas really it's not. It's this superficial materialist philosophy that's been imposed over the data. So I make that kind of distinction a bit, because I think a lot of people who pass themselves off as scientists, in a way, I see it as quack science. Like, to me, for instance, it's quack science to deny the existence of evidence for a multidimensional existence, including evidence for ghosts, poltergeists, ESP, psychokinesis, out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, experiences in other realms. And there's such a huge, vast evidence for these. Okay, and then people who think they're the scientists, they say, oh, there's no evidence for the paranormal, no evidence. Okay, and they think because they have some specialty in science that they're making that as a scientific statement, but it's not. It's just their prejudice, and they're so closed-minded that to dismiss all these evidences. So people who consider themselves rational scientists really are the most irrational, dogmatic. Like Blavatsky said, in our day, the scientists are even more opinionated than the clergy. And I would say that's the same today. And so a lot of, like, these Committee for the Investigation of the Paranormal and the Skeptic Societies, these people are quacks. And when you look at their evidences and their dismissal of paranormal things, you see it. Their scientific method is so even worse than the people who provided legitimate evidences to begin with. So I think a lot is quack science. And then you say about, like, how we don't try to study God's law, and that's, to me, so profound. And I remember 30 years ago reading Swami Prabhupada, who was the head of Krishna consciousness. And he was a very profound spiritual teacher. And he said, all human beings have inherent possibility of experiencing God consciousness and self-realization. And he says, this is the highest aim in education. But within the universities, there's no department for developing God consciousness. There's no department for developing consciousness. Okay, so the most important aim of knowledge, because if you attain higher consciousness, it then also alters all your understanding of other areas of science. It has profound implications for other areas of science. But this most important consciousness and developing consciousness is completely ignored and denied. And instead, we're given superficial philosophies which demean human beings. Like, Darwinianism is a complete fraud. The claim that evolution happened by kind of random mutations and survival, and that there's no intelligent design in nature. Another thing they do is they create straw men to attack. Like, they debate, do you believe in creation or evolution? But it's a completely fraudulent dichotomy. Okay, because I believe in both. I believe that, that God, in a way, creates a universe, and he creates a universe in which the possibility is there for human beings to evolve. Okay, so the creation process is often seen as an involutionary process, where God becomes a stone, and then there's a counter-movement, which is a possibility to climb that ladder of self-realization again and to return to the Godhead, to elevate to the level of the star.
Yeah, the question is posed to us, though, pertaining to the physical and not the spiritual, you see, because that answer is found in the spiritual. Creatures are going to evolve. Let's say at one point mankind may have had a tail. Actually, we have a tailbone. So at some point in our evolution, it's possible that our tails were lost or unnecessary. Maybe we stopped climbing trees, or maybe we stopped hanging around the reptilians, you see?
It's funny. I've always been fascinated with how children are so drawn to dinosaurs. And at one point in my life, I thought, oh, yeah, we were probably the dinosaurs. See, because I believe like that the spiritual element in us, we could have different bodies through different periods and cycles of evolution. So I don't rule out that possibility. Like, why are children so fascinated by dinosaurs?
Well, then if we were to follow that through, and it was because we were dinosaurs and we were to believe the bunk they tell us about where abiotic oil comes from, then we're paying for that. You see,
well, they've taught us fraud in every aspect. Like, they've suppressed information and knowledge about ancient, like, human artifacts and evidence of human life hundreds and thousands or millions of years ago.
Yes.
Like, the standard account in science is they think humans in our current form evolved about 100,000 to 200,000 years ago. But there's all kinds of other evidences in other fossil levels and so on that there were humans on the Earth or advanced beings similar to humans like 40 million years ago. You know, and we find around the world, we find all these, you know, the suppressed civilization, like submerged artifacts in Bimini. And then about 5-10 years ago, they found a whole city off the north coast of Egypt, completely submerged off the north coast of Egypt. It was described at the time as the biggest archaeological find of the century. And, you know, there's so many of these artifacts, and all this has been hidden from us. And we have all these Rockefeller-funded museums and scientific societies who continually suppress the emergence of these kinds of evidences in order to maintain their quack science of evolution by happenstance and Darwinian. So it's just another area, like understanding human origins. It's another area in which we've been lied to.
Yes. Now, it doesn't take a metaphysician to recognize the fraudulent nature of science, mainstream science. That doesn't mean all science is fraudulent, but what is publicized, what is shared with the public, what is taught to even the people who move into the scientific community as a vocation are receiving the information which is being funneled through a sieve, okay? And you know, a sieve is smallest at the bottom. There's just a few holes, and there's a very, very limited amount of the ingredients that can come through. And I'll say this, and I don't say this egotistically, but my own work for the past 35 years has been a demonstration that it's untrue to say that there are no such things as a paranormal or parapsychological phenomenon going on. What about telepathy? Is it a fluke that the people who are visiting this planet from other parts of our galaxy are all telepathic? Isn't that indicative of a higher consciousness, a higher physical reality for them? They understand what is best to eat, what is not good to eat, and they eat the good things, and they open up those pathways to higher consciousness. It can be achieved through the physical. It can be achieved through knowledge, which becomes part of the universal mind. But here, everything is based on suppression. Suppression of the physical body's ability to regenerate itself. Suppression of thought. And they're doing their darndest to disavow any reality. It won't be long, if things continue like they are, where you'll hear anyone uttering anything about spirituality being executed, because it won't be tolerated. And in a sense, it's right on the cusp of that anyway. Now, I don't say that to produce fear. I just want people to think about the amount of control and mind games that are going on, manipulating people's consciousness and cutting them off from the source of their true power, their true inner power. Everything has become a head game. People are not feeling things in their heart. They're not approaching things from the deepest, most meaningful sense. They're more concerned about how they're going to conform with everyone else in society than be the individual that they were created to be by the Creator himself. That's my rant. Go ahead.
Wow, I totally agree. It ties into what I was saying about Henry Mackow said that the last thing the Illuminati want is a renewal of belief in God, or a renewal of people's attaining spiritual consciousness. And I mean, you see someone like Hitler in his time, he gathered up and executed theosophists in Germany, people in theosophy. Like, he was very afraid of the occultists and spiritually oriented people. And that, you know, there is risk of that in our times. You know, a madness has gripped the human race. And you describe these people playing a head game. You see, in a way, that's how I see these Illuminati. Like, they're developed in the mind in a certain way, and I believe they acquire certain occult faculties through their rituals and methods. And in a way, they have a megalomania. Like, their mind is so, they're so taken by the mind and the consciousness of the mind, but they don't have the spiritual consciousness. In a way, see, you can develop higher faculties of the mind, but if you're not established in the heart, you don't have that spiritual consciousness. Like, the elites have no nobility of heart. They have a megalomania of the mind and the control of lower powers. But in a way, they don't have an awakened heart. They don't have compassion. They're incapable of experiencing love. Their psychology is primarily self-egoically centered. They, mm-hmm. In a way, they sell and lose their souls. So, in a way, I believe they, over time, become possessed. In a way, it's as it's described in the Bible, they're possessed by demons. It's through the heart. I think it is so important. We need, like, there's a spiritual war going on this planet. We have a serious group of psychiatrically disturbed people who are, call themselves elites, and they believe they have some kind of inherent right to commit genocide against people and to poison people, spraying them from the air and committing their false flag acts around the world to manipulate people and completely deceiving people through the media and education. These people are whacked in a way. Mm-hmm. They're so obsessed with their own money, sex, and power, the lower motives of a human being. The next first level of awakening of human consciousness and spiritual consciousness is the awakening of the heart. And these people don't have that. So they're empty inside, in the heart. A very profound Kabbalistic teaching that it's like how you were saying earlier, in the beginning, kind of when God is like this infinite being, kind of, and God fills all space. So according to Kabbalah, for God to allow an individual being to come into existence, God had to withdraw himself. And that is called the Zimzum contraction. So it
and that is free will, too.
Space.
Yeah, at that point, that's where that was the endowment of free will, wouldn't you say?
It is, yes, because God emptied the space, removed his properties to allow that being to experience individuality and separation, like, and free will.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in life that people have free will. You only have free will to attain true will is a mystical attainment.
Yes.
See, people as they are have no will. It's like Gurdjieff says, everything happens. Your thoughts, your emotions, your reactions, you're continually conditioned by everything from your past and your environment. So people mm-hmm. normally have no will. Instead, you're an automaton. But a person, if they can break through that conditioning and attain to knowledge of oneself, then one acquires true will, which is your higher will.
Yes.
Like when people say, take Aleister Crowley, do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, love under will. But they distort it because they think that, oh, that means do whatever you want. And that, but it is for their purposes, you know, be as greedy as you want and mass murder people if it make you money and give you power and what all, you know, enjoy your perversions as much as possible. And they think that's, oh, do what you want. That's all of the law. Okay? And that's a perversion of what Crowley's teaching really was, which is about attaining to the level of the higher will.
Mm-hmm.
Which I believe we can do, and then I think we can become conduits for the manifestation of higher will on Earth.
Yeah, if true will is really true will, then there is no right and wrong. And yet God implanted us with the knowledge of that, the wisdom of that, in the core essence of our being. And the process of life is to bring that to fruition, to cause it to evolve and to cause it to expand and to continue to become an awareness, which doesn't have to be three-dimensional in nature. It can be multidimensional. Yet at the same time, those that know this create rules for this rock floating through space that, well, if you do this, you're rewarded. If you do this over here, you're punished. So it's a system of reward and punishment, yet who are they to mete out the rewards or who are they to mete out the punishment? And they're rules that they themselves do not live by. You see? So there's that dichotomy. There really is no right and wrong if everyone is part of the all. It's the individuation and the separation that's forced upon us that creates the illusion that we have to obey these people because they have attained some kind of power. And how they've attained that power is a mystery, but that mystery is being unfolded. It's called truth and revealing the lies of history and the corruption of the governments and the depravity of these individuals. Now, I don't mean to go on here. I just wanted to sort of summarize my own take on that in terms of what you said. Would you go back to this part from Slugs? Is it chapter 9 on the Hasdamus individuals and the Nalu Osnian spectrum of impulses?
Yeah, just before I come to that, I'd just like to respond to one thing you've been mentioning is like, what is right and what is wrong. And in Beelzebub's tales, Gurdjieff's teaching, which he traces back to what he calls the Akkadian society, which came from Atlantis. He says mm-hmm. there was this esoteric brotherhood or society, and they, when Atlantis submerged, they went to Egypt and they helped construct the pyramids and things like that. But there was this ancient society, and their motto for what was good or bad is concerns whether or not that we have a conscience within us. And he says a divine spark of conscience within the human being. So something is wrong if it violates your conscience. If you know, mm-hmm. you know through having a conscience, you know when something's wrong. Like, you know in your heart it's wrong.
Yes.
And if it doesn't affect that, well then, yeah. So that how Gurdjieff kind of defines right and wrong.
Yes, yes, I agree with that. Technically, if we were living in full consciousness, we wouldn't have to make those decisions, would we? We wouldn't have to make those choices.
No. No, we would just be in touch with the core of our being, and we would I believe like in the core of our being, I believe human beings have what I call the bliss sheet, eh? And it's described as a small, like the size of a grape, or relatively small. And it's a mass of unemergent light. And if a person is awakened in the bliss sheath, then you have the experience of being filled with blissfulness in the body. We've all had tastes of this in life. You can look at an infant who's just born, and you just look at the gleefulness in them, because they're still, their consciousness is still within the bliss sheath. But as people grow older and they're conditioned, then you lose that feeling of the heart. And I think the elites are most damaged emotionally. And I think that's because of the kind of families they come from, they don't really have loving relations with their parents. And they're pawned off, and their parents don't have time for them, and they're sent off to schools where they're introduced to homosexuality and all the kinds of things they try to engender in them.
Yes.
Like class consciousness and seeing themselves as elite and different and special and all these things. I think the elites are severely damaged emotionally and spiritually. Your spiritual damage is related to the emotional damage.
Yeah, a couple of nights ago, I announced on the show, I had learned that Amschel Rothschild,
I heard that show. That was very interesting. Had committed suicide, or supposedly.
Yeah, supposedly, or allegedly committed suicide. Now, is that the kind of stress that one has to endure, possessing quadrillions of dollars? Really, you know.
It's hard to imagine. Don't these elites ever want to do anything like for humankind, like out of kindness or love for humanity or love for life? Like, there's just something just so unbelievably perverse about them and what they do. Like the accumulation of this wealth of people around the world and stealing the resources of all the third world countries and polluting the environment, the earth. Just, it's so incredible. Where are those with nobility of heart or upright of heart? It's so pathetic. And you see all our governments, they're just pawns and puppets to these people. It's incredible. It's an incredible story. I never would have believed. I have to see life as God's story. Mm-hmm. And it's like so beyond anything that any human beings ever come up with in a movie or anything. Eh? It's just like this unbelievable tale of what's been done and the kind of mass hypnosis of the human race. All these deceits have been fostered upon people, so people have no idea what's really going on in their society. No idea. They're being poisoned and all this sickness, and people have no idea what's causing it. And they're so preoccupied with men playing games with balls and drinking and sex and titillation and such.
Yes, I agree.
It's amazing. It's an amazing tale. And how there really are these kind of satanic forces that have kind of you know, behind the international global cabal is really what we have, and all these democracies, what we kind of were raised to think were democratic countries, it's all been a fraud. It's been a sham for hundreds of years. So it's pretty rude awakening when you wake up to it. I have to see it all as God's story.
Well, I have to tell you one thing, and this is from my own personal experience and from my own consciousness, my own awareness, that this sort of evil is not exclusive to planet Earth. Mm-hmm. And that planet Earth actually is sort of a retreat, and a source of materials and sustenance to those that would rape and pillage it. So this is something that goes on throughout the galaxy, and I'm quite certain in outside the galaxy it goes on as well. Some have speculated that Satan himself has been returned to the all of the Creator and has been basically forgiven and is living out a different existence, but the remnant of his creations is what we're witnessing right now.
Wow, that's a very interesting concept. I could see that being so, because he set something in motion that then has an momentum independent of him.
That, yes,
that's
exactly.
Very interesting what you say. I'd never heard that. Thank you for sharing that.
Well,
I meant to mention, Don, you were asking about the slugs.
I wanted to go back to that.
Second edition of the slugs, and I've added 80 pages to it. And the new edition of it, I much enhanced the whole section on the processes of reciprocal self-destruction or war and the causes of war. And that whole section on that's been developed into, instead of one or two chapters, it's a whole section of 5 to 6 chapters. So I'll send you a new copy of The Slugs this week.
I'm very pleased with it. If you would, and I keep bringing us back to this, I would like you to expound a bit on the 7 points that I brought up a couple of times.
Yeah. Okay. So Gurdjieff's talking about what he calls, and I don't know even myself how to pronounce it. Like I usually say Hasnamas, and I've always meant to ask you if you can determine any kind of derivation of that word, like in a way Gurdjieff knew Armenian, I think, and Greek, and I don't really know how he arrived at that term, Hasnamas. But
well,
it. Go ahead.
The word moose on the end would be a derivative of the German word müssen or müssen, which would be must.
Okay.
Must, M-U-S-T.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, to be required to, in other words. So these are individuals who do these things by rote. It's sort of a rule that dictates their makeup, their psychological makeup, and how they operate. The Hasna, I think, I can't equate it to a language. It might be sort of like a word like mumbo jumbo. What does it
mean? Yeah. Gurdjieff uses, he kind of creates different words at different points, his own language in a way.
Yes. But yeah. I think he uses that word, but I recognize the moose on the end. Which,
oh, yeah, must.
Ich muss means I must, you see?
Oh, yeah.
Or du musst. Now, it changes, but it's in the first person.
The main way Gurdjieff defines what he means by Hasnamas, he says that these are individuals who lack the divine impulse of conscience. Okay, which is, so that's their defining characteristic. And then he describes them as being subject to 7 different types of impulses. And I don't have my book available. I can't even pronounce. He has a funny invented word for it, like Nasulian impulses or something like that. I forget.
Nalu Osnian spectrum of impulses.
Yeah, okay. And then he lists seven. And the first one, I think, is like every kind of depravity that they kind of enjoy, every possible kind of depravity. And another one is that they have the urgent need to destroy the existence of other living, breathing creatures. And another one is that they have to conceal from others what they consider to be their inferiorities or deficits. Okay, so they're always trying to pretend to be something that they're not, to kind of hide their own insignificance. What are some of the others?
Well, you handled the first one, every kind of depravity, conscious as well as unconscious. I'm actually taking these off of the Slugs page on your website.
Good.
So you covered that. The feeling of self-satisfaction from leading others astray. So go ahead. Expound on that.
Yeah, and can't we see that? Like, you just look at the media. Like, what husnamus is in the media? How they've deceived the American public. And they go on, like, all your newspaper reporters. I mean, these people are pathological liars who really have enabled these terrible things to be done to American people. The whole while deceiving them. About 9/11, about the wars, everything. These are husnamuses. And they have this kind of self-satisfaction of leading other people astray. And behind the scenes, they think that they're so clever. Okay, or they might talk degradingly of the goyim. You know, they can deceive the goyim. They can deceive people. And they have a smugness in that. So I think that really applies. You see that with the elites, like how they think they're so illuminated because of how they've been able to deceive humankind.
Mm-hmm. That sort of bridges number two into number three, and I think of the economy and the financial institutions that they've created out of thin air. The irresistible inclination to destroy the existence of other breathing creatures. But I think that includes really their creations as well, you see. Their institutions and the methodologies that they use to control everything. I think that's also part of it. Much of it is born out of death, actually, you see.
Yeah.
So it begins with an absence of life force in it. And they present it as an illusion, which ties again back to number two, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm commenting, but I was hoping you would say something a bit more in that regard.
Destroying every breathing creatures. And I mean, we just see these people, they're not only destroying people by intentionally spreading diseases through our society and around the world. But, I mean, they're destroying the oceans and the land through the chemtrails. And you see what's coming up in the U.S. is 5 years of your military running exercises, which are going to destroy, like, something like 10 million sea mammals off all the coasts of the United States. Look at that. Like, these people are psychopaths who would do that. That's a terrorist act. You're destroying the oceans. You're destroying these mammals. These people are psychopaths. But they'll do it to play their little war games. And they'll probably find schools of dolphins and they use their weapons on them. You know, the cruelty of these people. So it's not just like other human beings that, you know, they'll murder a million people in Middle East in order to have military bases and control the resources, you know, and that's fine to these people. You know, they have no respect for life. They have no heart. They're obsessed with greed, power, and their sexual perversions, like the lower motives.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that in the world is the complete lack of respect for life and even the earth.
Yes, I agree. Now, number four, you say the urge to become free from the necessity of actualizing the being efforts demanded by nature.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, see, Gurdjieff sees us as human beings as having, he calls it being part Gadol's duty, that we have certain being obligations. And his being obligations, like we in for Gurdjieff, we need to strive to maintain our physical body and have what we need for our body, and then we need to strive to attain our own I or our individuality, and we strive to help other people attain their own level of self-realization, and we strive to understand the laws of world creation and world maintenance. Okay. So we have strivings in the way in the work, which Gurdjieff calls a system. And there's a certain way we strive for self-perfection in terms of trying to develop ourselves in our being and developing our capacity for understanding truth and for feeling love and for feeling in harmony with nature and so on. Now, these people, they grow up, they're so pampered and spoiled, and they're so... Their false egoism is so crystallized in them that they have, in a way, they don't have to make any struggle to kind of provide for themselves. They're like spoiled children.
They're like parasites, actually.
Yeah, parasites. Yeah. They live off other people. They don't do anything productive. They live off other people. They live off human suffering.
Mm-hmm. Now, when he says actualizing or the necessity of actualizing the being efforts demanded by nature, wouldn't that also include giving back to nature, honoring nature, grounding with nature, honoring nature in a sense of doing what is going to sustain nature instead of to kill it? What we're doing, taking petroleum out of the ground from the inner earth, they're not satisfied with what's on the surface. They're trying to go beneath the crust of the earth, and they probably accomplish that to some extent. They're actually violating the laws of nature at the same time. They're trying to penalize us for the damage that they've created and put the blame on us. Build automobiles, take oil out of the ground that runs on the various fluids that they develop from the oil they've removed from the grounds, and blame us for using it.
And then murder people who come up with water cars. I mean, it's a complete fraud. It's just another thing. And the way they suppress the use of alcohol as a fuel. Okay, like, because it was used as a fuel 100 years ago. I mean, they suppressed all these things. I mean, these people are criminal psychopaths who believe they have some inherent right to have this kind of total control over people and the resources. So they've created this need for petroleum. And I mean, imagine if water cars were introduced. Where would the Rockefellers' fortunes lie? All of a sudden, they lose a lot of money, you know. And if we had cold fusion devices in our homes and didn't need the power grids, who's going to lose money? GE's not going to be very happy with all their nuclear plants and being able to nuke people now. You know, it's just all these inventions, all these things which were unnecessary and which we were deceived about. And huge things, like the role of petroleum and then all the wars that's been related to. And the whole time, it's completely unnecessary.
And this thing of creating deadly weapons, nuclear weapons, that are not tolerated in other places in this galaxy whatsoever, for good reason. Mm-hmm. And then taking derivative energy sources and producing power, metered power, and then deliberately sabotaging those facilities that they've created to produce that power. That's what's going on right now today, you see?
Yeah. Yeah, very creation, creating disorder and all their manipulations that go along with it. Like,
Now, number five, you say, the attempt by every kind of artificiality to conceal from others what, in their opinion, are one's physical defects.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I think that's so good. I mean, it's just like how people, in a way, I mean, we can't strive to be something that we're not. Everybody tries to hide what we see as our own deficits or defects, and you know, you see it in all the kind of surgery that goes on, and all the clothes and cosmetics to kind of conceal one's true nature. And you see it on all the politicians. Like, you look at them, what beautiful suits they have. It's like the nicer suit they have is like it gives them significance because they're empty inside. Gurdjieff sometimes calls Hasnamasas, he calls them terrestrial nullities, because it's like they're empty inside. They've not developed anything of their higher emotional center, of their heart consciousness. So in a way, they're empty inside. So they, you know, they have the fanciest clothes, you know, they're on TV and they look as though they're kind of important and power-possessing beings. Everything they say is a complete pathological lie, but they look good.
Yeah. Well, these obsessions, to me, are just more of the same insanity. And you could say the physical defects caused by all of their creations, especially in the medical community. You see, the things that deform, whether you're talking about, it's one thing to actually fix a problem one might have with an internal organ or with their eyesight or their hearing or something like that. It's another to say that a person has to look a certain way to have any value. Or, for that matter, I wouldn't restrict it just to physical defects, but what about the mental defects?
Would hold true there, certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
Or emotional defects.
See, idolatry, isn't it?
Say again?
Ultimately, this is all, number six is dealing, or number five is dealing with idolatry. We're talking about, idolize that those that look a certain way or act a certain way or think a certain way or possess certain physical objects.
Yeah.
More than others, you see.
It's like striving to be something which we are not, in a way. Yeah.
Okay, number six, the calm self-contentment in the use of what is not personally deserved. Okay, you're talking about non-producers there.
Yeah, that's so true, that these people, in a way, they acquire their fortunes and estates by matter of birth and the family history and such. And it's not like they personally earn or deserve these things, but they,
Number seven.
It's like you say, they're parasites. You know, what did the elites ever do? They don't build a house. They don't, you know, they manage all the world money, but what do they produce productively in any area? In a way, they create nothing but misery for people and impoverishing people.
Mm-hmm. Number seven, the striving to be not what one is, which would mean the striving to be something other than who you are.
Yeah. And I think they're kind of empty inside, and they're striving to be something, because they have this inner emptiness, which I believe is because of the condition of their heart, the pathological condition of their heart, and that's why there's that inner emptiness. They don't have the compassion, the love, capacity for those within their hearts.
Yes.
So they have that inner emptiness and then they're just striving to be something. It's a fascinating account. And then in my book on the slugs, I go through all different stories that he explains, like Hasnamasas, like some of them are, he explains their role in wars and kind of creating wars, and they're being stock jugglers and forming special societies, Gurdjieff calls them. which then become criminal gangs. He says the modern special societies of initiates, he says he calls them criminal gangs. And Gurdjieff was saying this back in the 1920s, when he wrote the book. It was amazing the insights he had. It's like how everything changes, but everything remains the same. It's the same, you know, there's fascinating sections in The Slugs where he describes why people can't stop war and what it is about the power-possessing beings. Yeah.
You wrote this, of course, in the book. That's where I read it. He referred to the leagues that they created, and the first one being the League of Nations, which eventually evolved into the UN. And most people see the UN as another useless group of parasites dictating to everyone else what they must do. All the while creating more of the same problems, fomenting the wars and extorting and blackmailing world leaders under the threat of annihilation and actually condoning and carrying out orchestrated attacks. They call their cohorts allies. And even in the Bible, there's a story of a legion of demons who identified themselves when Christ was performing an exorcism. He was actually casting out the devils that had inhabited a possessed individual, and he asked them to identify themselves, and they called themselves Legion. Okay, we have the American Legion. What is that actually? You see, this is. To the people who were in the military and retired and certainly made sacrifices, to them it's a way of keeping in touch with those who they stood beside in a particular war. But these wars are engineered for the purpose of putting money in the pockets of these so-called elites, who you've very accurately described as psychopaths, and we have the National Football League. We have the Major League Baseball. Okay, we have the National Basketball Association, which at one point called itself a league. It is a league. They refer to these as leagues, and it's the people at the top making all the money, diverting the attention and the consciousness of people. It's a way of herding with an invisible cattle prod, herding people into situations, into enclosures, where they sit and act crazy. They become fanatical. They're called fans, for short. And this is all disregarded. In fact, it's those that are totally ensconced in those realities that are in denial about what's really happening. Don't you find that rather interesting?
Yeah, I had one other association to the word legion. Gurdjieff uses that, where he talks about like how human beings kind of think they have one I, and they always kind of say I, and you kind of assume that I is always the same I. And Gurdjieff instead sees our eyes as all little eyes. And those little eyes are always changing. Like you say, you know, how you love someone, and then you get so angry at them over some little thing, and then you're changing all the time. So instead of having one eye, you have all these little eyes which are pulled out by different stimuli and different occasions. So we have no real eye. And so Gurdjieff says man's name is Legion. That quote is in the Gurdjieff book, and where I talk about the multiplicity of eyes. So that's one way in which. So it's like we've all got these little devils in us. You know, our name is Legion. We're not unified in ourselves. We're not established in our core essence. And then we attain true I by being established in our core essence and in our hearts. And then, yeah, we don't want this multiplicity of eyes. We want to have develop something that's constant and stable in us.
Yes. When one stands back in their consciousness or in their physicality or in their mental perception of what's going on, it seems to me that those who are called the straw men, meaning our corporate identities, which are in no way who we really are, we look at those that are controlling this system objectively, and it appears at the moment that they are grasping for straws. They have become suddenly very desperate that their plans will fail or are failing, and we have every indication that they are failing, despite what they say. I think what they tell us through the media and their legal pronouncements through governments around the world and this unending cycle of war and destruction and chaos, they themselves are grasping for straws. Do you get that impression at all, Christopher?
I hope so. I hope so. At times, I think they must be worried. I mean, never has... I mean, we even had that quote, I think it was Brzezinski mentioned that it was last year, where he said, for the first time, we've kind of got this global political awakening. And I think that's what we need, and we need to just keep upping it and upping it. Like, I see we're facing a problem of humanity. Like, these problems we're talking about, it's not just in the States or in Canada or England. It's all of the countries. We have countries which have become controlled by this international global crime syndicate. And they perpetrated all these horrendous crimes against the peoples of their own countries. So these people are guilty of all kinds of war crimes. If we can ever bring truth and justice back to the earth and charge these people around the world for their crimes against humanity, we would seize their assets worldwide. It would pay off the debts of all national debts of all the countries of the world. This is what I call the zero-point proposal for 2012, is that that we prosecute the world elites, seize their assets around the world, reduce all world debts to zero, and give all the assets of all the countries back to the peoples of those countries, and reset the whole thing. And that would introduce a new age.
Yeah.
Because I believe in some taxes, but you could immediately cut taxes in half and so reduce taxes. You just have such a wealth and abundance in our society. All the scarcity, and it's all has all been artificially created.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's no reason why everybody can't have a house and a decent life and a job and food and such. There's never been a need for all of this. And all the money's wasted on the military and intelligence and security, nothing of which ever produces anything useful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all criminal. And,
yes.
And it's destroyed. Like, the resources it takes of the world is just unbelievable. And we've never had a period of history in 2,000 years or longer where we haven't had these processes of reciprocal self-destruction. And humanity, we have to, because of the advancement of technology, we can't turn our eyes to these things anymore. Because, you know, they're spraying us with all kinds of toxins, and they're designing, they have all their chemical weapons labs, and the military and the police have betrayed the people of our countries. But now, because of the ferocity of their weapons of mass destruction, the existence of life on Earth is in peril. And at the same time, there's this possibility. I think these people have shot themselves in the foot. And I think their crimes are going to be exposed worldwide. And I think what we need is like what's happening in Greece, where the lawyers are getting together and they're suing the government. And these people in our government, they need to be charged for war crimes and treason for the things they've done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in Canada, we're involved in Afghanistan. But this is all based on an intentional public deception, which the government has allowed to be foisted on the Canadian public. And they know they're involved in obstruction of justice, accessories to mass murder. They're involved in complicity in terrorism. They're involved in terrorist activities. Here's a statement from the Canadian law. Terrorist activity means, this is offenses against the public order. Terrorist activity means an act or omission in or outside Canada that is committed in whole or in part for a political, religious, or ideological purpose, objective, or cause. Well, doesn't that just fit these world elites? They have a political, religious, and ideological purpose, objective, and cause. That's exactly what they have. These people, they fall under this terrorism legislation.
Mm-hmm. You've been describing the various agencies and methodologies that they use to carry it out, too. So,
yeah.
Again, that gets blamed on the people, you see. That becomes just a jackboot to put on someone's head or on their neck to pin them to the ground.
And the police who are becoming those jackboots, they got to realize that they fall under the anti-terrorist legislation. And they can just say they're doing their job. But in a way, the Nuremberg trials, it doesn't make a difference. You should have known. They're wantonly violating people's constitutional rights. I mean, what they're doing is absurd. They have all these silly little SWAT teams that invade people's homes and threaten them over minor drugs or vitamins and... And these people are all cowards. Why are the police and intelligence community, they're all such cowards. Like, why don't any of them, they never go after the real terrorists. They want to kind of pretend there's terrorists, like boogeymen under the bed or, driving down the highway. But we know who the terrorists are. But the police and the intelligence community, they're all such cowards. They won't go after the real terrorists. They want to pick on ordinary people.
Yes,
become part of it. Freud calls it, it's a defense mechanism. It's called identification with the aggressor. It's like a child who has an abusive father. So as a child gets a bit older, he becomes like the father, and he becomes abusive to his siblings. He identifies with the aggressor. And that's what these police are like. But they're joining the ranks of the terrorism. They need to realize this. People are getting the number here.
Yes, I think in looking for a solution, we should not dismiss the presence of the Creator and the reality that we were all created from the same source. Just like fruit that grows on a tree, some fruit is bad and it gets nasty real fast, especially when it's forced to fall off the tree before it's properly ripened and it's fully grown. In the rest of the galaxy, what is occurring on Earth is being viewed with the hope that we do wake up to what I just said, that we have to, regardless of the path and the methodology one wants to use, we have to recognize the fact that we were all created. And forget about what science says. Science is playing a role and is a cohort in all of this. But, Christopher, we're out of time.
Yeah, we've gone a long time. Thanks, Seth, for holding on with us. And yeah, we have gone long. It's been a pleasure, as usual, Don.
Closing remark you would like to make here, and I appreciate you allowing me to get my two cents in.
Oh, we've just covered so much, I'm not sure I can... I mean, I pray this is coming undone. I mean, that's part of what I do. I pray, I say the Lord's Prayer, and I love it where it says, Our Father, which art in heaven, Hallowed be thy name. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And I have a smudge bowl and a feather, and I burn sacred herbs like cedar and sage in it, and I honor the seven directions, and I always try to, like, reach up to the heavens and ask God, like, God, like, thy will be done. Let thy will be done. Restore justice on this earth. Bring these people's karma down upon us, upon them, and give us, like humankind, a chance again to recover our world. And I just pray that that happens. And I think we don't just want to pray, but we want to be doing practical things, talking to people. Like, you know, it's praying, it's doing, it's relating to other people. You know, this is, I believe this is the kind of time in which people's souls are forged. And when we end up before the Creator and we're asked kind of, well, what did you do? Why? What did you do? Watch TV and drink Budweiser? You know, your nation, you know, is murdering people around the world and you just watch the TV soap operas? You know, what did you do?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, why did you why did you mock my messengers would be one I think he would say.
Yeah.
You know,
that's interesting in the slugs is how Gurdjieff talks about how the Hasnamas is distorted all the messenger, all the messages of all the religions. My new version of the book has a whole chapter on the degeneration of religions, which is very interesting and ties that together. I'm going to definitely send you a copy this week, Don. I'll get it off.
Well, I look forward to that. Thank you. And I want to encourage folks to go to your website, zeropoint.ca. Now, that's spelled out, zeropoint.ca. And check out Christopher's books. These are definitely works not for the faint of heart, but those who are searching for the truth. And I want to compliment your work. Whenever I pick up a book, I'm inspired by what you have written and to study the writings of those that you have chosen to bring to the forefront for the purpose of awakening people. You've done an excellent job. And
thanks,
your,
Don,
your books are highly recommended.
Thank you.
Also, be sure to tune in to BBS Radio .com, station number one, every other Saturday. I think your next show is on the 9th, if I'm correct.
That's right, yeah.
9th of July, Saturday afternoon. Christopher, it's been an absolute joy and pleasure, certainly a learning experience for me. And
for me, Don.
I want to wish you the best. Our hearts still go out to you in remembrance of Karen, your significant other. She is with us. I can feel her presence.
Yeah, she would love the show tonight.
Well, she did. She heard every word.
You're right.
Regardless of what science says about that, okay?
Yeah.
So I want to thank you again, and I'd like to have you back on in July if you would come back.
Oh, please. I always love coming on your shows, Don.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. You have a good night. I know you don't celebrate the 4th of July.
No, but, we got Canada Day tomorrow. Or today is Canada Day.
Well, happy Canada Day.
Yeah.
All right.
Goodbye. Thanks.
All right, folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. And tonight's special guest, Christopher Holmes, Ph.D. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints over at BBS Radio. We had Seth Hendrick on the sound this evening. I'd like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be scientist inventor Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. And if you can, tune in tomorrow. Happy 4th to you. And have a good night.